You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_daddy. Well, it's officially the weekend, which means college football. And more importantly, we're one day away from real football, which is great. Still 2 days, and in fact, probably a lot more than 2 days when you factor in all the hours and minutes and seconds that we are away. You know, it's not 48 hours. It's like a lot more than that. But anyways, we won't worry about that. What we can worry about, however, is Za'Darius Smith got put on IR. So that's super great. Now, IR means he has to be out for 3 weeks. Personally, I don't think that should impact us as much with the Detroit Lions. I know that's, again, I said the same thing about the Saints. Not a matter of can we lose. It's not even a matter of could this be so close that Za'Darius Smith makes the difference. Of course. We're talking about should, not could. Shouldn't be a big deal. However, weeks 3 and 4 against the San Francisco 49ers and the Pittsburgh Steelers may be a little bit of an issue. And to be completely honest, as well as Preston played and Rashawn played, I'm not even super worried about them. I mean, we've fielded some terrible pass rushers for many, many years, and we've got a better situation than what they've got. I'm kind of just worried about the depth, which, again, is kind of silly because, you know, again, we're going from, you know, washed-up Clay and terrible Nick Perry to, you know, competent Preston and kind of lethal Rashawn. Maybe, probably, I don't know. I mean, this is kind of a case of be careful what you wish for, right? We're all saying, come on, where's Rashawn? He should be out there. Why don't they play Rashawn more? Well, we got what we wanted. Apparently, whoever is the one that grants wishes didn't hear the part where we said make Preston, you know, not play as much. But that's, you know, I guess we'll take it. The one thing that does stick out to me, however, and this made me think about the Saints game as well as the games going forward, was Joe Barry, the defensive coordinator, kind of discussing what had gone wrong, and obviously some very straightforward and obvious answers. For one, it's the first game in the system, which is not really a good enough excuse, because look at any new defense almost ever, and they're never that bad week one. But he said that was it, and then there was miscommunications, even though he didn't say that that had anything necessarily to do with the touchdowns. That was just guys, I guess, losing or whatever. But anyways, he went on to talk about this whole Za'Darius situation and said, we're going to have to find ways to kind of generate pressure. And as somebody pointed out, you kind of wonder if maybe that means more schemey type stuff, like what we saw in the preseason, which kind of gets you a little bit excited. But it also made me think back to the Saints game, and it's almost like a light bulb went off in my head that they were trying to do to the Saints exactly what the Saints did to us. We looked at the Saints with the same analysis that I looked at the Saints. I mean, they did the same as I did, and said, they're not that good up front. We should be able to just bring our guys, our front, normal front four, front five, whatever it is, depending on our package, and win, and be able to use our linebackers more so in coverage, and keep our safeties back, and play a little bit more vanilla. Obviously, that didn't work because our defense didn't really super show up. Defensive line, in particular, pretty terrible. And then, you know, the corners, pretty much everybody between the corners and safeties, with the exception of Jair, gave up a touchdown. And then you think, well, why couldn't they have adjusted? But you kind of harken back to that Manning thing where they're talking about adjustments, and they're like, that's kind of a joke. Like, that stuff doesn't really happen. And it makes sense, because you spend an entire week putting together a game plan and how you're going to do things, and it's probably not the easiest thing in the world to say, you know what, scrap that. We're going to change our entire game plan to doing different things. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong because it's just play calling, but I tend to think that could be a problem. I guess the only question is how on board does your defense need to be? Like, could you just change it up in your head and be like, you know what, we're sending the linebackers. And then when you start doing that, the defense is like, well, I don't understand. What do we do? What? Whoa, huh? I don't know what that means. We didn't plan for this. I don't know. I don't know how that stuff works, man. I didn't play professional football. But again, that ends up being sort of my question. And it also makes me think, so for example, the 49ers and Steelers, I tend to think we'd probably want to do that. Especially the 49ers, because they do tend to have a pretty good offensive line and whatnot. But I still wonder about the Lions, if they're going to look at it and go, I don't think we really need it. We'll be okay. If we can get our guys doing what they need to do, I think they can generate the pressure. But at the very least, they've got to have some kind of a contingency. I mean, I don't know, man. Again, I don't understand how the game planning and all that works, but I don't know how you go into a game without a plan B. How do you not have a, if this doesn't work, maybe we start looking in this direction. You know what I mean? Like, we're just going to keep it vanilla, and then you get annihilated, and you cannot get off the field, and your offense has had 12 plays in the first half, and it's like, all right, plan B time. Probably by the end of the first quarter would be my thought, right? If we just cannot hammer this down, first half for sure, first quarter, though, would be ideal, because we only get four of them. And again, just mix it up and try it out. Like I said, in that Saints game, it felt like every time they brought an extra blitzer, worked pretty well. And I went through the statistics of Jameis when we blitzed, and it was obviously nowhere near as good as when we didn't. But there was never that thing where it's like, we're just going to keep doing this. It's like, no, we didn't plan for this, so we can't. I don't know. It's stupid to me. But anyways, obviously that's very upsetting. And the even more potentially upsetting part is there's no guarantees coming back in 3 weeks. IR just means a minimum of 3 weeks. He might be 4, 5, 6, 7. I guess the one positive is if he is out even longer, week 5 is the Bengals, which I guess I shouldn't downplay them after beating the Vikings. And then you got the Chicago Bears. These are generally not seen as extremely good teams. And then we get Washington, again, not exactly the best team in the universe. And so, the real big thing is going to be the 49ers and maybe the Steelers. I'm not even 100%, I guess I'm not 100% sold on anything. I don't know anything. I really don't. I feel like week one maybe taught us something, but maybe it taught us nothing. I have no idea. You know, the Patriots and the Jets, I don't know. I'm assuming the Jets are still bad because, I mean, they were really bad, and they were bad last year, and they're still bad, so probably bad. New England, I don't know. They got a quarterback that seems fairly competent. I'm not really sure how good he's going to be. I don't really know how good the rest of the team is, but I just don't know. Denver won, but I'm still not super buying it. Jacksonville, I'm pretty sure, is going to be trash. Buffalo's 0-1, which doesn't necessarily have to mean anything, but it's kind of a question similar to the Packers of how good are they? Are they for sure like a real dominant Super Bowl contender, or are they just kind of like, you know, more or less going to make the playoffs, but I don't know to what degree. Miami's 1-0. The Jalen Waddle and Tua thing seems to be on fire. San Francisco won, and you want to look at it and say they might have a quarterback, and they seem to be everybody's scared of the 49ers every year, despite the fact that they were only good once in Kyle Shanahan's tenure. But I don't know. The Eagles looked pretty scary, despite the fact that they're trash. The Rams, probably scary, but again, almost lost to the Lions. And so, again, you go all the way down the line. Bengals, are they legit, or is that just a stupid thing to even consider? Same with Houston. It's got to be stupid, right? The Browns, the Bears, the Saints, Carolina, Arizona, Minnesota, Tennessee, Baltimore, right? I mean, really big questions, not just I'm not 100% sure yet. Like massive swings between they could be trash, they could be really good. I don't know. More than half the league. So that's the other thing that week two is going to have to flesh out for us. And tomorrow I'm planning on going through some picks. I've been doing a ton of background work. I had a cool little system that sounded great, but man, it took so much time. It's like, I don't think I'm going to be doing this very often. But it'll be pretty in detail for tomorrow's game, tomorrow's games. But anyways, in place of Zadarius, the Packers did sign off the practice squad of the Buccaneers outside linebacker Ladarius Hamilton. So we went from Zadarius to Ladarius, and boy, what a difference a letter makes. Because we signed him off the practice squad, he does have to go to the 53-man roster. So, I mean, he's in there. 6'3", 260, first-year play out in North Texas. So, I mean, it does lead to some level of excitement when you get a guy like that. You know what I mean? Because there's always those guys. You know, it doesn't sound super exciting when you're like, oh, we got some scrub practice squad guy. But think about how many times we have those guys on the practice squad. It's like, this guy's really good. I hope he clears waivers, right? And then he does, and you're really excited about him. And then somebody snipes him off your practice squad, and it's like, no. Point is, the Packers have been watching this guy, and they're pretty excited about him. Because you're certainly not just going to throw a dart at somebody on the practice squad. Especially, again, when it means they have to go to the active roster. We have guys on the practice squad we could call up. Nah. But he played a good amount in the preseason for Tampa Bay. Again, undrafted free agent, North Texas Mean Green. He played 24 snaps week one against Cincinnati, 13 against Tennessee, and 27 against Houston. His biggest asset, clearly, is his ability to hold the edge. Not a super refined pass rusher, although he did manage 2 pressures on 14 attempts against Houston in week 3. So he had 0 pressures, and then 2 in week 3 against Houston. So he finally got that covered. Another big benefit of him, terrible in coverage. So hopefully there's never any hope whatsoever of dropping him in coverage, because he had 5 snaps where they dropped him in coverage and he was just bad. But 71.2 run defense grade, 76.3 tackling grade. Obviously didn't miss any tackles. Again, 2 pressures, including 1 sack and 1 hurry. 5 tackles, 4 of them being stops. And on those 5 coverage snaps, he was targeted twice. One of them was caught for 6 yards. So I don't necessarily anticipate getting a lot of opportunities for Ladarius, but again, the Packers, I'm guessing this goes all the way back to college. They've had their eye on this guy because, again, that's a big deal. He plays at a small school. He's an undrafted guy, and now he's on our 53-man roster above guys that have been here for a while, guys that got cut, guys that are on the practice squad, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, that he probably isn't going to play, but still, that's they like him. And I've tried to learn to not immediately discount guys like this because every once in a while, Gutekunst just, he gets one. In other news, the Chargers also have placed right tackle Brian Bulaga on injured reserve. Obviously, you can't assume that if he was here that would still be happening. But it's still one of those things. Not that there's a lot of Packer fans that say we shouldn't have got rid of him, but it's just a consistent thing that happens. When guys leave, they just don't seem to do as well when they leave. Actually, let me look at Lindsley. I didn't even think to look at that. So, hilariously, and I don't know how I didn't think to look at this, if you look at overall grades, as I said, Josh Myers was the 5th highest graded center in all of football. Corey Lindsley was 18th. He had a 58.5 overall grade. If we look at last year, I can't imagine he had very many games like that. 58.4 against Tampa Bay was the lowest he had all year. So this would be the 2nd lowest we've seen all year, or, you know, if it was last year, from Corey Lindsley. It's not that I necessarily expect that to continue forever, but here are a couple other things to keep in mind with Corey. Number 1, 30 years old. Number 2, would have been extremely expensive. Number 3, he actually was pretty bad the last 3 weeks of the season. Despite having an 86.4 overall grade and being the number 1 center in football, he ended the season 63, 62, and 58. And now this technically would be his 4th kind of bad game in a row. The last time he was graded out as a really, really good game was week 9 against San Francisco, 81.6 overall grade. So I'm not saying that necessarily played into this, but that may have been part of it. And again, this is just common stuff. And I'm sure part of it has to do with Corey just being a really good fit here, and now he goes over to LA and it's a whole new scheme and a whole new system. But this is almost every time. Again, as I've said 1,000 times, with the exception of Josh Sitton, which was different circumstances, when we cut offensive linemen and we get really mad about it, they leave and they just don't do very well. So, and again, Josh Myers was 5th. Now, we'll see how this plays out. Corey could still end up being a top 5 center and our guy's completely garbage. But so far, another decision that seemingly was really stupid that I certainly was opposed to. I wanted to keep Corey and not Aaron Jones. But, you know, again, I'm looking like a guy that shouldn't be the GM, I guess. I don't know. Another fun little aside that I found, and again, I put this on Twitter, but I went back and I looked at it because, you know, I don't remember exactly what it was that got me thinking about this, but the Minnesota Vikings, I think the biggest thing is, again, appreciation for what we have. We say things like, oh, he was the 5th best center in football, and it's like, hey, that's exciting, but it's only 1 week. We'll see if this guy's any good. I don't know. Who cares? But that follows up with Elgton Jenkins, who was another 2nd-round pick. The last 2 times we got relatively early round offensive linemen was Elgton Jenkins and Josh Myers. And again, Elgton Jenkins was one of the top tackles in football, despite not even being a tackle. They're like, we're going to put you a tackle because we need you there, and we'll see how it goes. And he was one of the top-graded tackles in all of football. And then a guy we drafted, his first ever game, he was the 5th highest-graded center in football. He was the 3rd highest-graded pass-blocking center in football. It's not supposed to go that way. And I think for the sake of perspective, we need to remember, this is not how it's supposed to go. If you just look at the list of guys behind them, every single one of these guys has expectations that they should be better than a rookie in his first game ever. Ryan Kelly in Indianapolis. Granted, he had a fine game as a pass blocker, but still. Number 18 overall selection in 2016, right? He's been with the team for 5 full years. This is going on year number 6 for Ryan Kelly. He didn't do as well as our guy who played one game so far. David Andrews in New England. I mean, he's an undrafted free agent, but he's been with the Patriots as a center for 5 years now. Same thing. He's been a very good center for several years, right? He got beat out. Brandon Linder has been one of the top centers in football. He's a third-round pick in 2014. Ryan Jensen, he's a sixth-round pick, and he's always sucked. But again, the point is, Alex Mack. Alex Mack, obviously, much higher expectations. Granted, the guy's almost 36 years old, but first-round pick, he's an absolute Hall of Famer, incredible football player, incredible career. There's expectations for guys like that we shouldn't have for our guy. Corey Linsley at number 17 as a pass blocker. 55.1 overall pass blocking grade. That's bad. You know, the Broncos selected Lloyd Cushenberry in the third round in 2020. He was terrible in his first year. So now obviously what's the conversation every time you have a guy that's a relatively early round pick that had a bad year? You start talking about, well, year two. That's when you make a jump. Year two, 50 overall grade. Matt Paradis, the guy who's had a great, you know, again, there's all these expectations for all these guys. Some of them are new. Some of them are a little bit older. But Garrett Bradbury is one of those guys. Garrett Bradbury for the Minnesota Vikings was a first-round pick, number 18 overall. Super high expectations for Garrett Bradbury. And I remember when they drafted him in the first round and in that first year in 2019, I believe his pass blocking grade might have been like a zero. Let me go back and look. It was some of the worst of it was. His first game ever. This is a first-round pick, number 18 overall. His pass blocking grade was a zero. Zero. He played 53 snaps. 14 of them were pass blocking. Zero. I'd never seen a zero before in my entire life until Garrett Bradbury pulled it off week one. He followed that up with a 32 overall grade. Then, and that was against the Packers. 2 weeks later, he had a 36 overall grade. He also had a 25 in week 14 and a second zero overall grade, this time against the Packers week 16. That's a first-round pick. That's number 18 overall. So, and listen, that's relatively common. It's more common that you're going to have a number 18 overall guy that's not panning out than to have some second-round guy come in and just dominate the offensive line like he's been there his whole life. So anyways, the tweet that I put out was Josh Myers' first game ever had a higher pass-blocking grade than all but two of Garrett Bradbury's 35 starts. If Garrett Bradbury had switched places with Josh Myers and had done as well as Josh Myers, it would officially be his third best game ever. But alas, it's not. It's Josh Myers' first game ever, and it's Garrett Bradbury's 35th start, and he again had a really bad game week one because he's Garrett Bradbury. He had a 37 overall grade, 27.4 pass blocking grade. He gave up a sack, a hit, and two hurries in this game. Again, we don't know what Josh Myers is going to be, but if this guy's even a halfway competent football player, we've got to start counting our blessings, man, especially when the offensive line is getting to be so tenuous. You know, we're starting to lose some players. Just look at, you know, and again, I hate to keep getting into this argument. And I even said yesterday or the day before that, you know, the people that are not big fans of Gutekunst, usually it's because of Rodgers, but they maybe have a little bit more solid footing now than they did last year because of some of the changes that have been made. And some of these guys, especially the 2020 class, are not exactly where you'd want them to be. Some of them are not even on the team anymore. But let's just stop and think for a second the fact that a second-round guard stepped out at tackle and was one of the best tackles in football because of the guy that Brian Gutekunst picked. At some point, we got to give a little bit of respect for crying out loud. Come on. There's 32 teams in the NFL. At some point, you can't always assume the Packers have to be at the top. Somebody has to be, you know, outside of the top 10. Somebody has to be more toward the middle. Somebody's got to be below average. There's a big pile of guys that are just garbage. That's a big deal, man. And if the Packers do turn this team around and they do start to make a comeback, make no mistake, it's going to be because of guys like Josh Myers and Elgton Jenkins, as well as a litany of other guys that we've been able to bring in. Despite all the errors, despite all the issues, and despite all the bad decisions, there have been a heck of a lot of things that have been put together properly. Beyond that, it's just fun to make fun of the Minnesota Vikings because they try so hard. They really do. They've been trying to get this offensive line going for a while. Garrett Bradbury was like their real big swing, you know? I mean, not just was it a number 18 overall pick, but on a center. That's about as high as you'll ever see a center go. So they really went big. They went real hard trying to get a center so they can run that outside zone, a real athletic guy that can just get up to the next level and, you know, do all these wonderful special things. And he is one of those guys that's somewhat of an athletic freak. So despite the fact that he grades out terribly and he cannot pass block to save his life, you're going to see a couple run plays where he's just scooting, you know, and it's going to get picked up by some Coach Hahn type of guy who's going to be like, look how good he is. It might even be Coach Hahn. I bet if you ask him about Garrett Bradbury, he's going to tell you he's great. Not because he's wrong. I'm just saying he does things that other guys can't do, and that's why the Vikings picked him. But he also, he struggles mightily. But anyways, we'll wrap up this whole Za'Darius thing by, as Danny23 on Twitter said, this is Rashawn's coming out party. This is when Rashawn can explode onto the scene. This is when he gets all the snaps. This is when he gets all the attention. This is when they do not take him off the field and just unleash that man. And I hope he makes the best of it, because Lord knows the guy's been working real hard. He does nothing but train. He does nothing but build up his body and his mind to be the best and most athletic freak, which he already was the second he stepped onto the football field, but to just continue to hone his craft, to be a finely tuned machine. Now is his time. Now is his time for the entire world on Monday Night Football to watch the guy that nobody wanted to talk about, the guy that still everybody thinks was a terrible pick, to prove everybody wrong. But anyways, why don't we go ahead and take a break here? I want to start diving into the Detroit Lions. Nothing super in-depth, obviously, but I think the way I want to do this is let today be sort of the intro. Look over what are the Lions, who are the Lions, kind of just go through their roster. Tomorrow we'll be a little bit more focused on the games of that day, and then Monday, because it's a Monday night game, we'll kind of go a little bit more in-depth into this game as best as we possibly can. As always, if you'd like to support the podcast, patreon.com/pack_daddy. You can support this podcast for as little as $1 per month. It's just that easy, man. Or you can prepay for the year. It's like 10 bucks. I personally wouldn't want to do it that way, but I know some people are like, I don't like these monthly stupid charges. And so a lot of people choose to do it that way. But whatever it is that you can do would be greatly, greatly, greatly appreciated. Also, so you know, that Bakhtiari jersey was supposed to be cut off today. I should have been picking a winner today. The way that you enter this is to share the post. That's all you have to do. You go on Facebook, you share the post. There are literally thousands of people listening to the sound of my voice, thousands of Green Bay Packer fans that do not have a signed David Bakhtiari jersey, that literally just have to click one button that says share. Do you know how many people are entered to win this several hundred dollar value jersey with David Bakhtiari's name, signature on it? 13 people have entered. 13. If you share this right now, you have a 1 in 14 chance of winning a signed David Bakhtiari jersey. I'm so stunned at how little people are willing to do to get free stuff. This is why I don't like giveaways. It's like, click this button right here, and they're like, maybe tomorrow. Click. I took the post and I shared it in the Facebook group and I said, click this link. This is the one you have to share. I did it on Twitter. Thousands of people on Twitter that follow me. Hey, click this link and then click share and you're entered to win a jersey that's signed by David Bakhtiari. You do have to be registered at Pristine Auction. You do have to follow the Facebook page. That's an extra, like, I don't know, 3 minutes of your day. 1 in 13 chance. If you're one of the people that shared it, you have a fantastic opportunity. And I don't even think it's 13, to be honest, because if I click on this, a lot of these I can't even see. So I think it's people that shared the sharing, which I said don't do. I said go to the page and share it at the page, because I can only see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I see 5 people. And one of them is Jacob, who is not eligible to win this. There's a 1 in 4 chance for the people that shared this to win right now. 1 in 4. I'm not kidding. I think I might be done doing giveaways, because this is kind of embarrassing. this is really embarrassing. If you don't want to do it, I don't care. I'm just stunned that, again, I've already said I'm not a jersey guy. I don't really care. But I would do this just because I would like to have one. I mean, I'll frame it and put it up in my office here. I don't really want to wear it. I'm not a huge jersey guy. But this is a big deal. This is a signed memorabilia. It's a jersey signed by Bakhtiari. 4 people have entered in a week. 7 people have liked this post. Not that that matters, but 7. And I think we've gained 0 followers in the last, like, week. It's just, I mean, it's not uncommon. This happens all the time. Every time we do a giveaway, it's like pulling teeth. But this one is a little bit stunning. This is maybe the worst I've ever seen. So, I don't know. We got to figure something else out for next week. I'm tempted to try out Twitter because giveaways on Twitter usually blow up. Maybe Facebook's just too hard. I don't know. But I'm stunned. And again, if you want a literal 1 in 5 chance right now of winning a signed David Bakhtiari jersey, just go share the post. Go to Packernet Podcast Facebook page. I did all the hard work for you. It's pinned to the top. It's the very top one. You don't even have to scroll. You don't have to do anything. You could hand your phone to your 5-year-old daughter and give her the instructions, and she can have you signed up in 5 minutes. This is your last chance, though. Tonight. I said that wrong because it's Friday for me. Saturday night, probably late, because some people that are listening in the afternoon, I want to give you an opportunity. Call it like 7, 8 o'clock. Last thing I do before I rest my beautiful little head, I'm going to click on shares, and I'm going to pick one of the winners. And I'm not even going to have to get some randomizer because there'll probably be like 7 people. Just share it. Share it anywhere. Share it to a Facebook group. Share it to your friends and family. Share it to a baking group. I don't care. Just share it, please. Then the only thing you have to do after that is follow the page. Sign up at PristineAuction.com because they're the ones giving this away completely free. They're not charging us a dime. They're like, yeah, dude, if you want to say our name, Pristine Auction, we're going to give away tons of free stuff. And by the way, as I've said, they're super stoked about this partnership. The more people that engage with it, the more free stuff I'm giving away to everybody. We still got a signed Davante Adams jersey to give away, a signed Josiah DeGuara jersey to give away. I hope he comes back soon. And I think, is that it? Because the Jordy's gone and this is Bakhtiari. Was there 4 or was there 5? I don't remember. But it can continue for the rest of the year, potentially, if we can keep up the momentum from week 1. And I know everybody's bummed out about the loss, but I'm literally saying just go click one button and you're in. One button. And even if you didn't do the rest of the stuff right, I'm going to baby you through it and be like, all right, dude, look, click the follow thing so I can find you, please. Okay, cool. Did you sign up at Pristine Auction? Go do it quickly. Sign up. Go. So I can give you this jersey. But again, if you don't want it, you don't want it. I'm not, you know. Don't do me any favors, for crying. I'll take the freaking jersey for myself. You guys don't want it. I'll give it to Jacob. He does a lot of good work. Although knowing Jacob, he wouldn't even take it. He gave away a lot of his own personal stuff to this group for trying to help build it up. He's a good dude. Anyways, again, I'm just trying to help you out, man. By the way, Blaine, what are you doing? You don't want a jersey? Shame on you. Half Mexican lawyer. Was it some legal conflict of interest? Thought you were my friend. I'll take a break. We'll be right back. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for 5. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us. Anyways, we might as well start off with the quarterback. We all know who that is. It's Mr. Jared Goff. My suspicion with Jared Goff, and so far so good, is that Jared Goff, look, at when he got picked up in 2016, Jared Goff was a quarterback with, what's his name, Mr. 9-win or whatever. I don't know. It was a real bad situation, I'm sure you remember. But when Sean McVay came over, he implemented this scheme, and Jared Goff went from a horrific, I mean like worst in football quarterback, despite being the number one overall selection, to being a pretty competent quarterback. And then the next year in 2018, Matt LaFleur got a hold of him, again, the scheme and all that stuff, and he was one of the best in football, 84.3 overall grade. Now, Matt LaFleur left and things started to decline, maybe not because of Matt LaFleur, but I'm going to throw that little tidbit in there just for the heck of it. There were some personnel changes and, you know, people get caught up to the scheme. And if you're not a super great quarterback and you're very scheme dependent and people learn how to kind of play that scheme and you maybe lose a couple pieces here and there, there's a general decline. But since McVay took over, he hasn't been any lower than a 71 overall grade as a quarterback. He's graded out as good every single year with the exception of 2018, 84.3, as I said. So far this year in his one outing, 66.7 overall, which is below what you would expect. Now, it's just one game. Obviously, he's had much worse games than this in his career. And the 49ers tend to have a pretty stout defense. And it's his first game in the scheme and all that. So you can cut him a little bit of slack. But my expectation is that he would regress a little bit with the Lions. You know, and it's not just McVay in the scheme either. I mean, the wide receivers are terrible. I mean, aside from tight end Hockenson and whatnot, and the offensive line is a question mark at this point. But in that game, 57 pass attempts, which, you know, and that's the other thing to keep in mind, and I don't have a way to break this down by quarter or anything, but the massive comeback came toward the end, and obviously the 49ers kind of backed off, and as the statistics get better and the passes start becoming completed, the grade is going to improve as well. I'm guessing if you look at his first half grade, which again I can't, it would be much lower than it is. But 57 attempts, 38 completions, 66%, 338 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. Again, when you look at just the overall stats in that respect, it looks like he had a really good day, but the garbage time for the Lions started around halftime. He also had three big-time throws, two turnover-worthy plays. I haven't really developed what I consider to be a good ratio yet because it's kind of a new metric, you know, where I have with pass rush where I can kind of tell based on from experience of looking at this a lot what's good and what's bad. I'll try to do that, but just some general information. The 5.9 yards per attempt, 6.3 average depth of target really tells you, and again, when it's week one, it's so hard to tell, but it may just be the way that the 49ers played and what the Lions had to do, or he's just not going down the field very much, which kind of seems like a Jared Goff thing because that's the whole McVay-ish kind of system. There were three drops, which is a pretty high number, but you also factor in 57 attempts. I don't really know. That's maybe not that much. Three sacks in this game, 2.68 time to throw, which is not too bad, 92.6 overall passer rating. It looks like about 60% of his passes were short passes between 0 and 9 yards, 14% also behind the line of scrimmage. So when we include behind the line of scrimmage and short passes, we're talking about, what, 63%? 63.6, so 64. I'm sorry, 74%. Three quarters of all his passes were under 10 yards. Of all those ridiculous amount of attempts, he only threw six passes in the medium range between 10 and 19 yards. Five of those were completed for 79 yards and a pick. So that was kind of his money zone when you look at those stats until you see that was where his one pick came. And then passes 20 yards or deeper, seven attempts, only two completions for 45 yards. That was his lowest graded zone, I guess, or area. And then the one I generally care the most about is the pressure. When he was kept clean, he had a 70 overall grade, which isn't that different. And then under pressure, it was a 60 overall grade, so not that bad. So, contrast a 59 and a 69, basically. It's not that big of a difference. He was 30 of 40, 260 yards and three touchdowns while kept clean. He was 8 of 17 for 78 yards and a pick. So the stats look a lot worse than the grades do. But so overall, not the greatest start in the world. Not terrible, but it just sounds discombobulated. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a terrible start, and then you got to get into that. I mean, he basically had to turn into Matt Stafford as soon as he got to Detroit, despite the fact that it's a whole new regime, all new players, coaches, and everything. Once again, you cross that threshold in Detroit and you just got to be Matt Stafford and throw the ball 60 times. The wide receivers, again, as our lads has it, it's Khalif Raymond and Tyrell Williams as the number one and two, but Tyrell Williams is probably going to be out. The next two are Quintez Cephas and Tom Kennedy, followed by Amon-Ra St. Brown, who I don't think played at all, Trinity Benson, and then Kadarrell Hodge, which I'm just listing all the wide receivers because anybody's got a shot with this team. If we look at it based on a standpoint of total snaps, who got the most snaps with the team? Khalif Raymond was number one with 69. Let me just go to receiving so I can give you the stats right away. Well, then I can't see snaps, but I guess we'll just look at targets. Quintez Cephas actually had the most targets, but three receptions on six targets for 12 yards and a touchdown. Trinity Benson, three receptions on six targets for 19 yards. Khalif Raymond, three receptions on four targets for 50 yards. Amon-Ra did play, two targets on three receptions. Two receptions on three targets, 23 yards. And Tyrell Williams, two receptions for 14 yards. So, again, pretty much everybody played. Everybody got a little bit involved. But the most yardage anybody got was 50, and that's Khalif Raymond. And one guy, Quintez Cephas, had a touchdown. The highest graded receiver was Quintez Cephas, which a lot of people are going to be excited about the old Badger. But he was actually graded lower than... Actually, let me do receiving grades. Doesn't change much. He was graded lower than TJ Hockenson, obviously, but also Jamal Williams, go figure, was the second highest graded receiver on this team. Based on the statistics from week one, it looks like Khalif Raymond is kind of the deep threat, 16.7 yards per reception. Amon-Ra St. Brown also 11.5. Amon-Ra seems to be strictly a slot guy, 92% of the time in the slot, so he's going to be the guy over there up against Chandon, more or less. He had a 56 overall grade, so Chandon's got a shot of being able to hold his own. And then out wide, again, Khalif Raymond is probably going to be the top guy. Actually, they do have snaps. It's just in a different spot. Khalif Raymond got the most snaps, and then after that, it was Amon-Ra, who again is the slot guy. And then after that is Trinity Benson with 44 snaps. And then it drops off quite a bit to Quintez with 28. But who knows after that touchdown. So I don't know. Other than Amon-Ra is going to be their slot guy. And again, he had a 56 overall grade. And Khalif Raymond had a 63 overall grade and had 50 yards for the team. Pretty fluid, I would guess, and not super great, although I shouldn't run my mouth because I talked a lot last week and Packers got spanked by a lot of guys I said sucked. Looking at, we should do TJ Hockenson since we're on that already. Let's go back one. So TJ obviously is the top guy. The second highest graded guy at a 68 overall grade, he had a 76, which isn't super elite, but there's just no question. He's a good football player and he's super well-rounded. He's a good receiver. He doesn't drop the ball. He's a good blocker. 11 targets. DeAndre Swift also, by the way, had 11 targets. We'll get to the running backs. But 11 targets, 8 receptions, 97 yards, and a touchdown. This is the guy, no question about it. He does primarily line up in the slot. 64% of the time he's in the slot, only 28% of the time he lines up in line. So he's that, you know, old Jimmy Graham, kind of just put him in the slot, go run routes and beat guys kind of guy. Again, he does line up in line once in a while, and when he does, he's a pretty good blocker. Since we're here, Jamal Williams, 9 targets, which is... I guess shouldn't be. The number, this is, tells you about the wide receivers. Number one most targeted guy was TJ Hockenson, tied with DeAndre Swift at 11. Both had 8 receptions. Jamal Williams was the third most targeted player with 8 receptions on 9 targets, 56 yards. And then you get to Quintez Cephas with 6. Again, just to show how bad this wide receiver group is, the top 3 receivers are a tight end and 2 running backs. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a negative. I mean, we know Jamal's a good football player. You know DeAndre's an early drafted guy. He's talented. He's got some wiggle. And TJ, at the end of the day, it's still 3 guys you got to account for. It might not be our corners, which kind of stinks in a way because you kind of wish their best guy was a wide receiver because our best guy's a corner. Now it's like, well, our corner's going to be wasting all his talent on some bum. Just call it what it is. While DeAndre Swift, Jamal Williams, and TJ Hockenson go to work on what, our linebackers? I'm just saying. But anyways, looking at the running backs as running backs, the highest graded was Jamal Williams, but he only had a 68.4 overall grade, 67 running grade, but he only ran the ball 9 times. If you look in terms of actual attempts, he was second behind DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift, 11 attempts for 39 yards, 3.5 average. Jamal obviously outran him because it's Jamal Williams and he actually knows what he's doing. 9 attempts, 54 yards, 6 yards per attempt, and a touchdown. So he was running kind of wild. And not, you know, as is the case, Jamal is a really good running back, but he gets no opportunities because he's just the number 2, and that's just the way it goes. Sorry, dude, you go hang out on the sideline. But, 9 attempts, 54 yards, 6-yard average, and a touchdown. Sorry for rubbing my microphone. That's probably annoying, but it is what it is. Nothing I can do about it, man. By the way, yards after contact, DeAndre Swift 1.3, Jamal Williams 3.3. Again, that's just his thing. Missed tackles forced, he had 1, DeAndre had 0. 10-plus yard carries. Again, DeAndre had more attempts, but they both had 2 apiece. If you look at first downs gained, DeAndre Swift had 2, Jamal got 4. So Jamal was definitely the better running back. We'll see what they decide to do. If they decide to be wise and say, hey, I know DeAndre was drafted early, but heck, I didn't draft the guy. I'm going with the best guy available. And end up going with the man, Mr. Jamal Williams, or if they stick with Mr. DeAndre Swift because of his potential and where he was drafted or whatever the reasoning would be, I don't know. But we'll see how that plays out. Also, it's the Packers, and that may factor in. I don't know if it would be a positive or a negative to play Jamal because it's one of those, well, Jamal knows the Packers. Yeah, but the Packers know Jamal too. As far as blocking goes, overall, the highest graded blocker was their center, Frank Ragnow. Very, very talented center. He's been good for a long time. Guy that they absolutely nailed. Penei Sewell had a great day despite all the kind of, he was, It's kind of funny because we talk about Ja'Marr Chase, and it's like Ja'Marr had a terrible preseason. They should have taken Penei Sewell. That was stupid. But Penei Sewell had a terrible offseason as well. Then week one happens, and Ja'Marr goes off, and it's like, well, maybe that was the right pick. But Penei Sewell also had a good day. 75.6 overall, 78.8 run blocking, 67 pass blocking, which isn't the greatest in the world, but still fine. Gave up 0 sacks, 2 hits, 4 hurries. 6 pressures is probably more than you'd like, but, you know, whatever. After that, though, you got to go through, because, you know, there's a lot of other guys. TJ Hockenson's second highest graded. Got to go through halfbacks and wide receivers. You work our way down to number 9 overall is Logan Sternberger, the guard. He only played 2 snaps. I don't know if he came in for somebody that was injured, but that would be the next highest graded. If you go to the next actual guy on the roster, Jonah Jackson, 59 overall, 71 run blocking, 31 pass blocking grade. Terrible. Again, I can't predict what's going to happen in this game. I can't promise you, well, he's bad, so the Packers are going to run all over him. I said that last week. They didn't, but I can just give you the information, and we'll see how it goes. 31 overall grade. He gave up a sack, 2 hits, and 6 hurries for a grand total of 9 pressures. 9. That's staggeringly high. After that, you got Mr. Halapalavati Vaitai, my favorite name in the world to say. That's not true. There's probably like 6 or 7 football players I love to say, like Mekhi Becton. But 54 overall grade, 54 run blocking, 49 pass blocking, gave up 5 hurries, 5 total pressures. And then tackle Matt Nelson was 3rd from the bottom of all blocking individuals with a 52 overall grade, 58 run blocking, 44 pass blocking, also gave up 6 pressures. They gave up a grand total of 28 pressures in this game. They threw the ball a lot, so it's going to be higher, but that's a big number. It's a lot of pressures. Flipping over to the defense now, Trey Flowers graded out really, really well, but it's kind of fluky because the grades are mostly a reflection of his tackling and coverage abilities. His run defense grade was a 63, his pass rush was a 56, and those are the two things you really want him to do. Otherwise, the only two guys with 70 overall grades last year were Jamie Collins, the longtime Patriot, and then A.J. Parker, the cornerback, who I don't even know who that guy is, to be honest with you. Otherwise, it was at best average, and let's see, for the most, I mean, literally more than half were below a 60. So it was a rough outing for the Lions defense. But starting with the defensive line, you got Brockers, Alim McNeil, who they drafted in the 3rd round, and Nicholas Williams, at least that's what the roster is listed as. Michael Brockers did get the most snaps on the interior, 44 overall grade, very similar to the Packers with the defensive line just looking terrible. But he had a 46 run defense grade, 28 tackling grade, 0 pressures in this game. Nick Williams was 2nd most snaps, 55 overall grade. He generated 1 pressure in this game. Run defense was terrible, 50.7. Then Alim McNeil, the rookie, 51 overall grade, 52 run defense, which Alim McNeil is just a big, giant, massive human. That's all you want him to do is defend the run. He couldn't. And he also generated 0 pressures. Kevin Strong, also the other defensive lineman that had some snaps, again, terrible. 61 overall grade, 0 pressures. Johnny Panisini, they got rotated in once in a while, 64 overall grade, again, 0 pressures, 49 run defense. So he did neither. Nobody really did anything. This entire defensive line, again, the grades are 44, 55, 51, 61, and 64. That's all the defensive linemen. So, you know, and again, I went through this last week with the Saints. They're bad. Yep, they are. They're really bad. We going to be able to block them? I don't know. That's what I don't know. Now, the biggest difference, though, is they don't really have a guy that can generate pressures. They really don't. I mean, you could say Trey Flowers, fine. He's been fine in the past. But again, 0 pressures by Trey last week. The only guy that did generate pressures was Romeo Okwara. And he does get his fair share of pressures, I should say. But he reminds me a lot of, who is that? Like Reddick or something? One of those guys where he's just a pressure machine. Not necessarily even sacks, although he did have 10 sacks last year, Okwara did. But he generates a ton of pressures. He had 61 pressures on 424 attempts. But he's so pathetically horrible against the run. He averaged out as a 68 overall, despite being an 85 pass rusher. So you got to watch him. He's going to be flying around the edge. But he generated 4. Nobody else had 2 on the entire team. And again, unless Trey Flowers figures it out and kind of returns to form, there's not a lot here. Last year, Trey didn't play very much, but he had 13 pressures on 183 attempts. That's it. what is that, like 7%, 8%? That's not good. But anyways, looking at the edge guys particularly, again, the only reason I brought that up is because the Saints had some solid edge rushers. These guys, not as much. But Romeo did get the number one amount of snaps. Again, he can get some pressures. He got four of them, but he's so bad. I mean, he's outside of Alex Anzalone, he was the worst run defender on the entire team. Then you got Trey with a handful of less snaps. Again, zero pressures in this game. After that, Charles Harris got a couple snaps, about 15. He had a 29 overall grade. He did generate one pressure and on his 10 attempts, which is fine, but really abysmal outing. And then Austin Bryant, who was a guy that every time I bring him up, I got to mention that I really didn't like him in college. He was way overhyped. But he played one snap and did basically nothing. So that's their edge group. Linebackers, again, Anzalone is the top guy. Alex Anzalone, pretty longtime player. He's been with the Saints. It's one of the guys the Saints lost. He's never really been that good of a football player. Third round pick overall. Terrible outing. Again, 28.6 overall grade. He was the lowest graded player. 27 run defense, 46 tackling, 43 in coverage. He did get one pressure on his two attempts, which, you know, it's the one thing he seems to be able to do well, but it doesn't sound like they're even utilizing him in that capacity. So what's the point? Two tackles, three assisted tackles, one missed tackle. He was targeted four times. All of them were caught for 49 yards, 117 passer rating when targeted. The next linebacker, again, is Jamie Collins, one of the few guys that seems to be somewhat competent on this team. 82.6 run defense, so you got that working. But it is worth noting, overall last year, and you know, maybe he took a step, I don't know, but 64 overall grade, so it's not as though we know he's just going to dominate all the time. Otherwise, at linebacker, what do they got? Derek Barnes played five snaps, and Jalen Reeves-Maben, a couple real young guys. Both of them were pretty terrible last week. At corner, it gets super interesting, again, with injuries and everything, but Imani Arawarie was the top guy. We kind of cooked him last year pretty bad. Well, their entire DB group we did, but he got annihilated. He played all 55 snaps at a 38 overall grade, 38 coverage. Only had one tackle in the game. He was targeted eight times. Five of them were caught for 82 yards and a touchdown. Jeffrey Okuda is injured, so he's not even in the game. So after Okuda, you got A.J. Parker. Again, one of the only other guys that graded out well. Pretty limited amount of opportunities, but made the most of them. Should be noted, though, this was his first game ever. He is an undrafted free agent out of Kansas State. So if this guy, an undrafted free agent out of Kansas State, in his second game ever is able to shut down Aaron Rodgers in our group, then he must be the freak of all freaks. And that's it. There were no other corners that played a single snap, so they're going to have to get some other guys. I think Parker might have been in the slot, if I'm not mistaken. Can I even see that information anywhere? I can't, but I believe that is the case. Let me look on our lads here. Corner. Don't know, but I think it was the slot. It has to be, right? And then finally, you got the safeties, Mr. Will Harris. Will Harris has been with Detroit for quite a while, third-round pick in 2019 out of Boston College. Never been all that good, 55 overall grade in 2019, 50 in 2020, and this past week, a 38.3. Now, again, keep in mind, a lot of these 20s and 30s overall grade is probably because San Francisco just absolutely took him to task. So it's possible the Packers can do it, but it's also possible if they're just not up to it and, you know, doesn't have to be that bad. But still, he's always been kind of bad. Tracy Walker is a guy that I really liked early on. He started off getting real good grades, you know, 89.8 overall in his first season. And then a 73 the next year, which is obviously down a little bit, but still solid. And then last year was a 51 overall grade. So he just completely fell off the planet. I don't know what happened. But he had a 65, just an average game. Statistically, by the way, Will Harris, three targets, three receptions, 29 yards. Tracy Walker, two targets, one reception, 35 yards. Only other safety was Mr. Ifedi Melifonwu. He played 12 snaps, had, again, a 37 overall grade, 26 tackling, 33 in coverage, one target, one reception for 12 yards. He was a third-round pick this year. So a lot of real young guys on this team and not a lot of them doing a lot. Even the veterans like Alex Anzalone, Trey Flowers, all these guys that have been around for a while. It's just a bad mix. And so it's kind of hard to look at it and say, where's their strength? I mean, you could say it's off the edge, kind of like we had with the Saints. You could say, well, Trey Flowers is sort of a big body guy that can rush the passer. He's also can stop the run. And then you got the other guy, Mr. Okwara, I was looking in the wrong spot, who can't do anything, but at least he can get a couple pressures. But again, it's, you know, and I hate to even do it because I did it with the Saints, but defensive line is bad. Trey Flowers hasn't really been like elite level Trey Flowers in a while. Aquara, you know, again, he'll get a couple pressures, but defensive line is bad. Linebackers are bad. Safeties are bad. Corners are bad. I don't know what else to say about it. I know this is going to get thrown in my face if we lose. I get that. I just, what do you want me to say? Tell me what you want me to say here. I don't even think Lions fan. I want to talk to Dosa Dion, hopefully tomorrow. He reached out yesterday, wanted to do something. He was available last night, but it was kind of late, and I was like, I just don't think it's going to work. Hopefully tomorrow we can squeeze out a little bit of time, do a live stream, probably go on his channel. Maybe he'll come on mine, and I'll use maybe the audio for the podcast because I don't want to keep him around for three different shows. But I don't even think Dose would necessarily dispute it. You know, he might like a couple guys here. He'll probably like his edge guys. I don't know who he would. I doubt any of the corners. I don't know. Maybe some of the young guys. But there's nothing really to like. By the way, special teams, they do have one of the best punters in football, Mr. Jack Fox. His yards per attempt, 50.7 last week, 44.7 net, 4.39 average hang time. Not his best game ever, but he is a legit punter. As far as return guys, looks like they just had... They had no punt returns, so that makes it difficult to know how good they are. But on kick returns, they've got Mr. Godwin Ikwugbuike, whatever. I have no idea, but he's not great. So as far as I can tell, nothing super special here, but I guess I don't know for sure. But anyways, I got to get it rocking a little bit. And again, hopefully we can talk to Dose tomorrow and get a little bit of his insights. Obviously, last time I talked to a guy, and it sounded like he was just being a homer, but it sounds like he was also right about a lot of stuff. At least it seems that way because we lost. But anyways, again, go share that post and get you a jersey. It's basically free, and you can just get it by sharing. You got a one-to-one opportunity here. Otherwise, you folks have yourselves a great weekend, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.